from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Scientists have unveiled the first photo of a black hole.
We have seen what we thought was unseeable. We have seen and taken a picture of a black hole. Here it is.
Coming up at 10:30, we'll talk about why the new image is so significant. But first, the extraordinary life and legacy of Bridget Biddy Mason. She bought her way out of slavery and went on to become a nurse, philanthropist, and a major landowner in Los Angeles. We'll talk to the authors of a new children's book about Mason. That's next, after this news. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In a new children's book, Biddy Mason Speaks Up, Arisa White and Laura Watkins weave poetry and prose with historical facts to tell the story of Bridget Biddy Mason, a woman born into slavery in the early 1800s who later bought her freedom and became a prominent landowner, community builder, and healer in Los Angeles. Biddy Mason Speaks Up is the second in Heyday Book's Fight for Justice series, which introduces young people to historical figures who fought for social change. And we're going to talk to the authors about their work and maybe get some tips for discussing tough topics like slavery and rape with kids. And let me tell you who is going to be joining us for this segment. Laura Atkins is here in studio. Laura Atkins is independent children's book editor and teacher and co-author of Biddy Mason Speaks Up, and I should say also has a pedigree in public radio. Her mother's Carol Pearson. For those of you who remember that name or know that name, welcome, Laura.
Thank you, and hi, Mom.
Glad to have you with us. Well, your mom's in China. She's listening, though.
That's right.
We're also joined by Arisa White, who is a poet and assistant professor in creative writing at Colby College and co-author of Biddy Mason Speaks Up, and welcome, Arisa White.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you both with us. Laura, let's begin with you. This is a book which is tailor-made for educators and teaching school children about slavery, about so many things, about medicinal plants. There's a lot here. But Biddy Mason is just an extraordinary figure, certainly unknown to most who even study history deeply. Let me just say, again, by way of introduction, that we're talking about a woman who was who bought her own freedom, but who also was a prominent landowner, community builder, homesteader, philanthropist, and very wealthy, actually, too. So, I mean, the story has so many dimensions to it and is really such an extraordinary story. What led you to it, you and Arisa?
Yeah, well, so I co-wrote Fred Korematsu Speaks Up with Stan Yogi. That was the first in the Fighting for Justice series. And that came out in January 2017. And the next book, which I wasn't actually part of selecting, Stan, who was the original envisioner of the series, chose Biddy Mason. The book came out of a book that he co-wrote with Elaine Ellenson called Wherever There's a Fight, that was a book for adults about the history of civil rights struggles in California. And the thinking from Heyday and Malcolm Margolin was the publisher at the time, was how important it is for us to teach not just adults but children about the civil rights that we have and who has fought for them, and to tell stories that are underrepresented in our schools. So that Biddy Mason was a real natural figure for that.
Well, and you also have, Arisa White, a lot of history packed in here. I mean, you learn early on in the book that about 70%, 75% of those who were enslaved were actually working in the cotton cast industry back in the period that Biddy Mason was a slave, or I should say an enslaved person. You both like that language more, and so do I, actually, rather than talking generically about slaves. But we get a lot about the life on a plantation. We get a lot of the ugly side of it, too. I mean, whippings and rape.
Yes, we do. I think, you know, having, you know, the market has a lot of, in terms of like the children's book world, there have been a lot of books where, you know, they're writing about slavery, but unfortunately they're not talking about topics of sexual abuse and violence. And often there's depictions of slaves smiling. So with that conversation operating kind of out there in the world, we knew that we had to approach those like difficult subjects in a way that will be palatable for younger audiences and readers. And it was actually a creative challenge to think about how do I write poetically about sexual abuse in such a way where we can begin this conversation, not necessarily these sort of gruesome details, but to note that it's a part of the historical making of our nation.
But you're also, I think I'm using your language, you're repairing history to some mm-hmm. degree. I mean, that's an ambitious thing to do under any circumstances. You know, there was a lot of talk earlier on in the last wave of feminism about herstory as opposed to history. But this is a history that most people haven't been exposed to. And you, as an African-American woman, I think we're very proud to bring this story to the fore here.
Yeah, I was really excited to learn about Biddy Mason, to learn that she was a midwife, she was a healer, and as a result, got to learn about a lot about medicinal plants and remedies that enslaved people used on plantations, as well as the way in which midwives were honored in plantation societies. They empowered enslaved people to have some sense of control and choice over their bodies. And so, you know, as an African-American woman, it was so important for me to kind of go into the silence of history, the way that history only chooses, you know, the victors and everyone else is sort of like marginalized, but to bring Biddy to the center and to understand sort of, you know, to see her as a site for resilience, for power, for love, within this really violent institution, and to write her back into humanity, to sort of show our readers that enslaved people, even though the institution wanted to take away that humanity, they were people. They had strength. They had choice. They had intelligence. They had perseverance.
And they had agency.
They had agency, yes. And they had lineage. They had legacy, right? So there's, you know, this sense of, I think, you know, the way history kind of depicts enslaved people, where, you know, it's a sense of displacement and not belonging to a place, but, you know, captured Africans came from land, came from earth-based cultures, and that traveled with them. And so that was a really exciting thing to sort of trace historically, especially learning about young people who were enslaved. And there were, you know, shipments of young people who were brought over, and they were like 11 and 8 years old. And so it's just, you know, there's that tragic part, but then there is also the necessary need to know that that is a part of our like narrative as a country.
Well, we learn a lot in this narrative. We learn about indigenous people. We learn about medicinal plants, as I said earlier. We learn about Ubuntu, the idea that I am because of me. And we also, and let me go to you on this, Laura, learn a lot about slavery and what existed in slavery here in California as a free state.
Right, that's right. And I think very few schools acknowledge that slavery existed in California. We think of slavery, and racism often gets talked about in terms of the southern United States and segregation. People don't realize that there were segregated streetcars and schools in San Francisco. So part of what we want to do is look at California as a state with its own unique history, and think that one thing was that people of color and black people weren't allowed to testify in court against white people. So that while slavery was supposedly illegal in the state, the Smiths could still hold Biddy Mason and Hannah enslaved for many years. And finally, Biddy was able to win her freedom through the courts, in large part because of help from free black people who were in the Los Angeles area. And that's part of what we want to show in this book, is the strength of community and people, especially free black people, who worked to improve the rights and personhood and the way people were treated in this state.
I think I was reading somewhere where you wanted to see history through a feminist collectivist lens, and then somebody said, boy, that sounds too Berkeley.
That's right. That was the New York Times.
It does sound too Berkeley if you frame it like that. But, you know, it's certainly a worthy ambition. And I think you've brought it out and really achieved a good deal here. I mean, this is a story that has many dimensions to it. And we see things through a different kind of lens, let's put it that way. We see it through different eyes. And that's important, not only for kids, but for the rest of us. In fact, I think this is a book that really a lot of people should read, of all ages, of whatever demographics they belong to. And it's mostly middle grades up, though, that you're aiming this at?
Yeah. I mean, we say middle grade, which is sort of 8 to 12, though we – and Stan and I have spoken with the first book to over 8,000 students, primarily, I'd say, 4th grade through 8th grade. But we just spoke at Mira Costa in Oceanside to ESL students, adult high school students. And one thing about the format, because we use poetry, free verse, to tell the biography, but then we have these sections where we have photos and documents and historical information that's more sort of fact-based. And it turns out that's a really
You did a lot of research. I commend that.
A ton of research.
Yeah. And talked to a lot of people.
Yeah. And it turns out this format is really useful for reluctant readers, including adults, who maybe aren't able to read at a super high grade level. But the content is at, you know, people can engage in a lot of different ways. So we've been really gratified to find that these were a lot of people who came from Latin America. Some said, you know, a 60-year-old man, it was his first book. People who said they'd never been to school, who really loved and embraced the books and format. So it turns out to be a more powerful tool than I think we even realized.
Well, I want to excuse me a minute, Arisa. I know you want to get in here, and I'd like to hear what you have to say, but I want to give out the number. We only have a half hour with Laura Atkins and Arisa White, and we're talking about the book that they've done called Biddy Mason Speaks Up. It's about a woman who was born into slavery in the early 1800s, later bought her freedom and became a prominent landowner and community builder in Los Angeles. It's quite a story. And some of you may want to talk about, well, not only her story, but I'd like to hear from some listeners about how do you talk to kids about things? I'm talking about really young kids here, about enslavement and about rape and the things that went on during slavery. And what's the best way to broach those subjects, which are important, obviously, for the educational needs that they assist in, but you may want to weigh in here, and we'd like to hear from you. Any thoughts you have or any questions are welcome, and you can join us now. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. How to talk about difficult topics in history is really what I'd like to hear what listeners have to say. And join us. You may have questions about Biddy Mason. Maybe some of you who grew up in Los Angeles or grew up in with awareness of some of these major black figures like Biddy Mason who don't get the historical spotlight that they deserve may want to indeed bring some questions to the fore here. So the toll-free number to join us now is 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And Arisa, you're going to say something.
Oh, I wanted to add that, you know, that when parents are reading this book with their kids, they are learning a lot. So it's with, you know, in terms of like the format of the book, we ask questions to the reader. And so those questions become a way to prompt some of those difficult questions. And just thinking, you know, yes, it's for young readers, but because most people don't know about Biddy Mason and a lot of the historical information we're presenting, this is for every reader.
And there's also, and let me go to you on this, Laura, there's a kind of story of intersectionality here as well.
Right, right. So, I mean, one of the challenges here is what to include. We can include everything. What we would always come back to is the core person whose story we're telling, in this case, Biddy Mason. So when we talk about Native Californian issues, which are part of this westward expansion, I mean, she came from Mississippi across to Utah and then down to San Bernardino. Where we ended up bringing that in was the legal enslavement of Native people in the state of California, which a lot of people don't know about. So the big issues that are part of the story can be extended, and we had the challenge of thinking, how far do we go? But yeah, all of these histories are intersectional.
You also brought in resistance, Arisa?
Say that one more time, please.
I say you also brought in a resistance. I mean, we're talking
about,
you know, something that, again, is educational in terms of slavery that usually isn't pictured or usually isn't discussed in any way.
And yes, because I think also, like, with that narrative of
I'm not just talking about Nat Turner, by the way, excuse me.
Yes, also just think, because there's a sense of like depicting the enslaved person as passive and the institution of slavery was paternalistic and it was necessary for black folks in order to be controlled and taken care of because otherwise they had no mind of their own. And so it was important for us to show different ways in which enslaved people resisted. So we get these sort of larger narratives of rebellions, like the Nat Turner rebellion, which I think sort of incite our imagination. But there are also these smaller ways in which enslaved people resisted control. And I think those small moments is what add to those big moments of resistance and rebellion that I think history books are most attracted to. And I think because we were focusing on Biddy Mason, a woman, and often women are associated with domestic spheres and not necessarily larger liberation movements, we had to reframe how we thought about resistance from the point of view of an enslaved Black woman and one who had control over people's bodies. So there were ways in which enslaved people poisoned their masters. They worked slowly, along with forming, helping form rebellions, being a part of the Underground Railroad. So there was just a lot of small ways that help in sort of this liberation movement.
Let me remind listeners, we're talking to the co-authors of Biddy Mason Speaks Up. It's part of the Fighting for Justice series of Heyday Books. And Laura Freeman is the illustrator. And let's go to your calls. And let's begin with Yvette. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So I'm currently doing a research project on how parents talk to their children about race and racism. And I feel that when I speak to people, some of the solutions that have come up are, especially with younger children, is treating these people have no rights, and if you kind of act these out with your kids, like, what if I gave you the opportunity to have this, but you weren't able to, let's say you want some candy, and you're not allowed to have it because it's not your right to have it, or treat kids like bullying. Bullying is a thing that we consider unfair. Another thing that I think it's really good for kids is that they like to be heroes so they can upstand for these people that were not served well, or if there's a friend that's in a predicament that is unsafe. Anyway.
Okay. Thank you for that, and good luck with your ongoing research. I don't know if I want to get a response from either of our co-authors here, Laura or Risa.
Yeah, we had a focus group where we invited teachers and librarians and booksellers before the book came out to give their sort of thoughts and suggestions about how we can help to make sure people know about it. But one thing that came up with Sarah Zaharaka, who's a librarian, is that she read the book out loud with her son who's in the fifth grade. And she, we have definitions along with the text. So, for instance, we define the word enslaved, which is where we talk about why we chose to use the word enslaved rather than slave. But we also talk about white supremacy, race, and racism. And she said that reading those definitions with her son out loud actually created a way for them to talk about those difficult topics, which I don't think Arisa or I had really thought about. We thought definitions, it's useful. You understand what the words mean. But that she said it was a really useful kind of framework for that conversation.
And we'll bring another caller aboard here, and that's you. Laura, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yep, I'm here. Thank you so much for bringing this content to – I'm a middle school counselor, and I think – in terms of talking to kids, I think kids are ready to talk about these topics. And I think when adults avoid them, we show them that we're complicit or that we're uncomfortable with those topics. And I just think I'm looking forward to getting the book and, you know, passing it on to my colleagues. And I just want to thank you because there's so many themes that we can draw from in history from this one example to today as well, and so that they learn about history so that they can also see how that's happening right now.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure there are probably many other educators who are thinking along the same lines as that last caller. This is a very useful book. And here's another caller. Laura joins us from Redwood. Laura, hi.
Hi there. Great book, it sounds like. Do you guys see a rising exploration, investigation of what happened during the Reconstruction period? Because I think, you know, our nation hasn't really looked at that very, very well. And I know forgive my butchering his name, Louis Gates.
Henry Louis Gates has an article about this. I happen to see it, and it's a very good article.
Yeah, and there's a new series on PBS that he put together. It started last night on that period. So I think it would be very, very educational for folks, that in-between period. And there's just been an increasing awareness, I think, after Obama and the Black Lives Matter. We're just digging a little deeper this time around. Hopefully it will continue. But have you, and also have you thought about, having done all that research, rewriting another book for adults with greater detail?
Well, there are two questions there. Let me go first. Either of you want to comment on Reconstruction?
Well, we sort of, like, at the point in Biddy Mason's later life where she is freed and there's the emancipation of enslaved people, we do mention Reconstruction. So one of, I mean, because Biddy is sort of such an amazing figure because her life is at the intersection of so many historical moments, the 13th Amendment, 14th Amendment, westward expansion, California as a free state, but not acting like it. She becomes a site for thinking about all of these other historical moments. So we do bring up Reconstruction. We have a timeline that runs the length of the book. So that becomes another thing that students can further research. So Biddy's life becomes a starting place to learn about enslaved Black women, but then also to learn about history thereafter.
And what about an adult version of this book? Although, like I said, I think it's perfectly accessible and in many ways accommodable to, accommodable? No such word. It could certainly accommodate adult readers. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we don't have a plan. But that book, Wherever There's a Fight, that I mentioned that Stan Yogi and Elaine Ellenson co-wrote, Heyday is releasing a 10th anniversary edition this year. And that includes Biddy Mason stories along with a lot of other very important stories. So I'd recommend that book.
And here's Lillian who writes to us, we talk about slavery in the Passover Seder. We try to invite non-Jews to open the discussion to more recent slavery. And slavery, alas, is still very much with us. And let me get another caller on here. Shabazz joins us next. Shabazz, welcome.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. You know, we get a lot of books about the plantation period, historical slavery and so forth. But the question still remains, why is it that the African-American community don't seem to make any progress, since we are the community that led everybody else to freedom, justice, and equality? And it seems like we're the only one who have not benefited from it. It seems like our struggle stopped at getting the voting power, but we never moved to the next level of the need for economic power.
It's a big question.
Shabazz,
I'm sorry, it's a big question. We got seconds left here, but I'd like to hear, Arisa, what you have to say to Shabazz.
Well, I think, you know, I'm recognizing that, you know, in Black African Americans have a root kind of history of enslavement isn't a negative thing, and we need to recast that. It wasn't our fault. That's the history of racism, not a failure about being a African American, a Black person in this country, and we can learn from that. We have been a part of a liberation movement since the moment we stepped on this ground. In regards to how we use that, I think it's up to us to start thinking creatively about how to economically move forward.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much. Thanks to both of you for being with us. Good luck. Again, the book is Biddy Mason Speaks Up, and congratulations on it. Arisa White and Laura Atkins. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.